It's John Itzty and NPR's Julie Rovner. Thank you both for coming in.
Nice Welcome, to be David. Here.
John, let me start with you. Update us on what seems to be some very fast-moving events here in Washington today.
Well, it looks like they've reached a deal on extending middle-class tax cuts by redefining the middle class as people, households under $450,000 and individuals under $400,000. So remember, President Obama campaigned on extending those Bush tax cuts for people under $250,000. So that income level has moved up. We also understand that the estate tax has been, which was also going to expire, the higher levels for estate taxes, so that now it looks like people will continue to be taxed on after $5 million, let me start that over. The first $5 million of individuals and the first $10 million of a couple's estate will not be taxed. After that, it would be taxed at about 40%. That's up from 35%.
We've got a lot of numbers that we're going to be talking about. Let me ask you about one of the big ones that you brought up. President Obama campaigned on the idea of these higher taxes for the wealthy, as he called them, people who make over $250,000. It sounds like the deal coming together would raise that. The Republicans have been able to get a little bit of what they wanted, which is that people over $400,000 and families over $450,000 would be paying higher taxes. I mean, that was a pretty big deal for Republicans to get that number higher.
Right. And you remember about a week ago, maybe 10 days ago, President Obama had agreed in his discussions with Speaker Boehner that he would go up to $400,000. So it's not a big surprise that number moved up. One thing that the president and Democrats do appear to have gotten is an extension of unemployment benefits for about 2 million of the long-term unemployed who would have lost benefits if we'd gone over the fiscal cliff without correcting that.
And we should say that we're talking about a potential deal. We're waiting for the president to come out the White House. Nothing is confirmed yet. It's been a very fast-moving day. The Senate Minority Leader, Republican Mitch McConnell, has been in conversations with Vice President Joe Biden. I mean, it seems like what we expected, that if Washington was going to come up with something, all the movement was going to be in the final hours.
I think people came in this morning, a lot of people very skeptical that there was going to be a deal. About mid-morning to late morning, there started to be a belief that there might be a deal. The stock market started to rally when it heard that President Obama was going to come out and speak. And then there was word that he wasn't going to announce a deal. The stocks fell again. Now they're rallying again. We now do believe that the president will give us the outlines of a deal.
Quite a New Year's Eve in Washington.
Quite exciting.
Yeah, exactly. NPR's Julie Rovner, what have you been hearing so far? I know a lot of questions about entitlement programs and spending and how this is going to reshape what our budget looks like next year. I mean, what should we be looking for as this deal comes together?
Remember, even if there is a deal, you're going to have to get both houses to vote for this. We've already seen this morning Senator Tom Harkin, a liberal Democrat, come out and say, you know, a bad deal would be worse than no deal. He doesn't like it from the left. He doesn't like involving the estate tax. He doesn't like moving this threshold all the way up to $400,000 and $450,000. Then you're going to have to sell it, remember, to the House Republicans, who they couldn't even get a majority for to vote for what they deemed a tax increase for people over $1 million. So you've already got people whining on the left and on the right, and we haven't even seen what this deal really looks like yet. So just getting a deal out of these, you know, few people who are negotiating doesn't make this a done deal.
Well, what would a potential deal mean? I mean, if we have both sides, the White House and Congress, saying we've got something, but no votes take place before the clock strikes midnight tonight. I mean, is this fiscal cliff? Or are we still going to basically go over it?
That's right. You're still going over it. A deal means that both the House and the Senate have to vote on the same piece of legislation, send it to the president, and the president has to sign it. It's, you know, legislation 101.
But I think, David, you have to remember that tomorrow is sort of a free day. It's New Year's Day. The markets are not open. We're not going to see the markets tank. And a lot of this stuff, even if it's not voted on by midnight, can retroactively be fixed. So
some wiggle room.
there's still a good bit of wiggle room, and I wouldn't be surprised if they take it.
Senior Washington editor Ron Elving has joined us in the studio. And Ron, when we heard from President Obama yesterday, He seemed to be calming people down, saying, you know, we don't have to do everything about this problem, this so-called fiscal cliff, before the clock strikes midnight. What did he mean? Why should people not be quite so worried?
John has already mentioned the magical word retroactive. The Congress can do what the Congress chooses to do. The new Congress that's sworn in on Thursday could pass something on Thursday or Friday or Saturday or any time next week and say this will be effective starting at midnight January 1st, or if you will, midnight of December 31st, and make it all retroactive. Now, there are an awful lot of us who will be, in some measure or another, confused and inconvenienced while we wait for this retroactive direction from the federal government. Take the IRS, for example. Should they be telling everybody to change the payrolls that they're making out in the next week? Should they be telling everybody to recalculate the Social Security tax, which has been down from 6.2 for individuals, down to 4.2 for several years now. We've been extending that payroll tax cut. Should the IRS tell everybody to collect that or not? That's a huge source of confusion. So it would be very nice if we had some clarity tonight. However, as Julie has pointed out, there are still a lot of hurdles to be gotten over. And to introduce one potential cynical note here, the Senate may very well be coming up with a deal which the Senate can vote on, knowing full well the House may not accept it, in order to save face for the Senate and push the blame for the cliff over to the other side of the Capitol, over to the House. If they can't pass it, then the Senate looks relatively reasonable, even if people don't look at the details too much. The Senate looks good because it made a deal. The House looks bad because it wouldn't even vote on it.
You know, Ron, you talk about the confusion. I mean, it sounds like one giant mess. Let's try and help our listeners if we can. John Itzde, you've been doing some reporting on what exactly this could mean for Americans, for people. I mean, let's say we hear from the president in a few minutes. There's talk of a deal. There's no vote, as you said, Julie, and so we go over the so-called fiscal cliff. I mean, Wednesday morning, you know, after the holiday, if I'm a wage earner in the United States, an American, a family, I mean, am I going to feel an impact? And if not, when would that happen?
You know, given what we've heard about this potential deal and what we heard about the negotiations over the last week, I think we all are going to feel something even if we don't, quote unquote, go over the fiscal cliff. Because I think the biggest hit for the vast majority of people would be an end to the payroll tax holiday. This 2% bonus that we've been getting in our paychecks for the last couple of years will go away.
So that's going to happen no matter what.
It could in the end be part of the deal? I don't think so. The way things look right now and the way the negotiations have been going, I think the payroll tax holiday will end. And, you know, for the people, for households, let's say, who pay the maximum amount because their incomes are $110,000 for a couple, it could mean $4,000 less in take-home pay this year. And it will affect everyone down to the lowest level wage earner because you're taxed on your first dollar of income for the payroll tax.
Again, this is NPR special live coverage. We are awaiting President Obama. We have the image up on the screen here in the studio. There's an empty podium so far, and we will go to the White House as soon as the president comes out. And Ron Elving, let me ask you the politics of this. What is your take on these negotiations at this moment? The president seems to be in a strong position after we saw House Speaker John Boehner fail to get his chamber, his majority, to actually support his so-called Plan B. But, you know, what politically, where are both sides right now?
The president is in a relatively strong position because he is not responsible for either chamber of Congress.
That alone puts him in a strong position these days.
The wonderful contrast is that he can stand there and say, I am the president and I am the unitary leader of the executive branch of the government. I'm prepared to sign something if Congress can come to some sort of an agreement. And that, of course, puts the onus on the folks at the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue. So if either of those chambers fails to come to some sort of an arrangement, or if the two can't talk to each other, the president looks relatively reasonable. Plus, he's already put his cards largely on the table and said, this is what I want. These are the things I prioritize. And he knows not only that he's just been reelected on those priorities, which he campaigned on pretty explicitly, especially with respect to the top tax rate, but also that poll testing shows that he can sell his priorities to the country as a whole. Not everyone's going to love them, but he's going to be over 50% on most of those priorities, whereas the individual members of Congress may be able to do that in their districts or back in their home states. But as a whole body, the Senate cannot say that. The House cannot say that. They're in a much more messy world because they are Congress, and by nature, they are many, many people with many contesting views.
Again, we're waiting to hear from President Obama at the White House within moments, and we'll go live to the White House as soon as that happens. Let me ask each of you what you will be listening for closely when we do hear from the president. Julie Rovner?
I think I'm going to be looking at body language. I want to see how close this deal really is to actual fruition between these leaders. Then you have to start to see whether they can sell it to the House and to the Senate. I mean, you know, these are three discrete things that have to happen. They have to get a deal amongst themselves. They have to get a majority in the Senate. They have to get a majority in the House. Those are three very discrete things, and they're difficult in different ways.
John Isty?
Well, I'm going to be looking to see whether the president says anything about his tax cuts that were mostly directed at the poor. If they're not extended, families at the bottom of the income scale could really feel a hit, several hundred dollars there in addition to several hundred dollars from the payroll tax holiday if that's not extended.
And Ron Elving, what are you listening for?
The thought that the president has talked to enough of the people who are running Congress to have some sense or another of where the votes are on this thing. He's been a little bit disengaged in recent days. He did negotiate what was very close to being a rather attractive-looking deal with John Boehner a couple of weeks ago, John Boehner being the Republican head of the House, the Speaker of the House. And it seemed that they were getting back to that point they had reached in the early summer of 2011 when a mega deal, a global deal, a grand bargain, as we called it, was in the works. And then that came a cropper with the debt ceiling crisis of August of 2011 and John Boehner's inability to sell his half of the grand bargain to his caucus of Republicans back there in the House. We may be back there again in a few hours tonight. We'll see. But the question is, does the president think he's got something going here with both chambers of Congress? Is he really going to be ebullient about this? Or is he basically taking note of where things stand, giving us an update, and letting us know what to expect?
All three of you have covered important moments in Washington. One of the criticisms of President Obama has been that he has not done the hard work to develop a trust, a close relationship on Capitol Hill. We had a Democratic congressman from Iowa on the air in Morning Edition this week who, hugely supportive of the president, but talked about that there's more work he needs to do. He should be having more sessions. He should be having more breakfast. He should be having, more than just a congressional picnic each year to develop that trust. David Brooks, the columnist for the New York Times, said yesterday the president seems to come to these negotiations from what appears to be a morally superior place. What kind of position is the president in? And in the face of those types of critics, is this an important moment for him to show that he has a working relationship with Capitol Hill?
You know, I think, David, it's an important moment for him in that regard. But, I think back to Ronald Reagan. And he was not a particularly warm and fuzzy guy when it came to Congress. He didn't invite folks over to the White House for sleepovers. I think he probably had about as much contact with the Congress as President Obama, maybe less. But somehow he managed to convince members of Congress to go his way. Now, Congress was very different then, and I think the big problem we have now, I think, is the change in Congress. It's less of a change in the White House than it is a change in Congress.
What change do you see?
It's just become far more partisan as districts have been gerrymandered, and there are 75% of the districts in the House are safe for either Republicans or Democrats. So the members of Congress are looking over their shoulders at a challenge from the right or left, and they don't really owe anything to President Obama. I saw another number today. I think 15 of the newly elected Republicans in the House of Representatives for the next Congress, only 15 came from districts where the president won the popular vote. All the rest of them came from districts that voted against President Obama.
Wow.
So they have no real incentive to make a deal with the president.
Julie Ravner, high stakes for the president here?
It is, but I was thinking exactly the same thing that John was, that, you know, I've covered a lot of presidents and a lot of negotiations with Congress, and, you know, Obama came from the Senate. It's not like he doesn't know his way around up there.
Sure.
And he knows how to negotiate. I mean, he wasn't in the Senate for very long, but again, I think a lot of it is that Congress has changed as much as he hasn't done, and he hasn't done a great job. He's not Bill Clinton. I mean, he was, the great Gladhander, but the fact is that, everybody remembers Mitch McConnell's, statement that his major goal was to make president a one-term president. So there hasn't been a lot of reaching out from the congressional side either.
Ron Elving, you have written about Congress. The poll numbers for lawmakers in the institution right now are about as low as they can possibly be. Is this a moment when the country might be able to watch this and finally say, the lawmakers were able to come together and get something done? Or is this sort of low poll numbers and lack of confidence just going to go on?
The last time we went to the fiscal brink in this fashion was August of 2011 with that debt ceiling crisis we referred to earlier. And after that, the public approval of Congress dropped into the single digits for the first time since poll taking began. And when you get down to 7 or 8 or 9% approval, you begin to wonder what you're measuring is the number of people who misunderstood the question. Nobody was happy with Congress. Members of Congress were not happy with Congress. Their wives were not happy. Their husbands were not happy with them.
That's a problem. That those are bad times.
And that is, by the way, when it does begin to really bite.
I believe John McCain said that, we've actually lost our family members in these approval ratings.
And so if we are going to be going over this cliff this week, and we're not certain yet that we're not, if that's going to be another political failure on the part of Congress, and I say political failure because ultimately Congress's job is to compromise and come up with something. And if they can't, they've just failed. I'm not saying the left or the right or the Democrats or the House or the Senate or the Republicans, but just the institution, which is tasked with compromise. That is what Congress was designed to do in the Constitution. So if they fail to do that, then they deserve low approval ratings, no matter how much they've stood on their principles and their ideology. And in those low approval ratings, perhaps we'll find some inspiration for them to change their minds a little bit and talk to each other a little bit. But John really hit on it when he talked about how the Congress has changed. It is sociologically a very different place from what it was a generation or two ago when the members lived here in Washington by and large, and the senators in particular socialized across party lines. In fact, many of them preferred to socialize across party lines. They didn't like the guys in their own party nearly as much. And there was just a different kind of feeling. You could go to somebody and say, hey, we were talking about this at the basketball game where our kids go to high school together, and we kind of came to some understanding. That doesn't exist anymore. These guys don't live here. They come in for two or three days a week, especially in the House.
Fly back to their districts.
Fly back to their districts, talk to the people at home who tell them, don't you budge an inch and don't you compromise with that President Obama and so forth. And that's the mental state that they're in 90% of the time that they're here, 95% of the time they're here, digging in their heels, knowing that that's what will get them approval over the weekend when they go back home.
I think a lot of Americans are going to hear something like that, Ron, what you just said, that members don't live in the same city. They don't work things out over dinner or basketball games, kids' basketball games anymore. They fly back to the districts and they're going to say, what is this institution that we've elected? I mean, how does this end?
It's a representative democracy, and there's been a tension back to 1776 as to what exactly they should be representing. Should they be representing the views of the people who vote for them back in their district or their state and nothing else but? Should they be digging in their heels and doing combat and competing for funds and that sort of thing with all these other people? Is it a contest? Or at the same time that they represent a particular place, Kansas or the first district of Kansas or what have you, they are also representing some other sort of larger ideal, some national ideal or an American idea. Should they also be responsible to that? And there should be a certain balance and tension between those.
Again, just to recap, this is live special coverage. We're awaiting President Obama, who's expected to come out and speak at the White House any minute now, and we'll take you live there when he does. We expect him to talk about the fiscal cliff. We expect to talk about a deal that we understand is coming together today. There's been a flurry of activity in Washington. The Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell has been, as we understand it, in his office talking a great deal to Vice President Joe Biden, and we're awaiting details on what could be a possible deal. But again, as we have all been talking about, this does not mean the end of the road. Any deal that comes together would need to be voted on by both chambers of Congress, and that is no easy task, as we have seen recently. John Itzde, let me ask you, the word recession sounds very scary, and we've heard a lot of warnings that if the nation goes over the so-called fiscal cliff, we could be headed for another recession. How real is that, and how worried should Americans be?
I think that most economists believe that if we did feel the full force of the fiscal cliff, if the Bush-era tax cuts were not extended, if the payroll tax cut tax holiday is not extended, if unemployment benefits don't get renewed, and if we have these big cuts in defense and the discretionary programs, we could very well, or we will, may very well go into recession. The Congressional Budget Office predicted that about 6 months ago. Most of the private forecasters predicted as well. And some of them, one in particular, Mark Zandi, who's with Moody Analytics, who's a well-known economist. I was talking to him last week about it, and he said, you know, if we really take the full force of this, we could end up in a 1930-style recession.
All right. As I understand, we're going to hear from the president in just a couple minutes. Sorry, John. I thought we were having him come out right there.
Sandy was pointing out that the 1930s was really two recessions separated by a period of growth. And he fears that given the hit to consumer confidence that would come with this if we absorbed all of the tax increases and spending cuts of the fiscal cliff, we could end up in a very much the same way. And we'd look back at it in the future as maybe not the Great Depression, but, we would find a word for it.
So an important moment. It looks like some of the president's aides are coming out right now. Some people are some guests appear to be getting together behind the podium. And Julie Rovner, it looks like we're going to get the president any moment now. But set the scene for us. You've covered a lot of moments like this in Washington. What are you looking for?
I'm guessing that these are probably not aides. I'm guessing that these are people who would be directly affected by whatever bad thing would happen if we go over the fiscal cliff. And this is one last appeal by the president for Congress to please do its job. You know, I'm trying to find out. I cannot remember, as in the now 27 years I've been covering Congress, I cannot remember a time that Congress was actually in session between Christmas and New Year's. When they did the health law, the Senate voted on Christmas Eve morning. That's the latest I can ever remember them being in, and the holidays. So this is really pretty extraordinary that they're actually in session this late. I tweeted last night, if you'd asked me in September which was more unlikely, that the Redskins-Cowboys game would be meaningful on December 30th, or that the Senate would still be in, or that Congress would still be in dealing with the fiscal cliff, I'm not sure which I could tell you. And I'm still not sure which I could tell you.
we'll ask you after you watch this and see what direction this is going in. And we're going to have the president in just a few seconds. Ron Elving, help us set the scene here as the president gets ready to speak.
We're seeing the president apparently walking into the White House, or he's walking between the old executive office building, the Eisenhower executive office building,
yeah, it looks that way,
and the White House. And he looks like he's going to be walking directly into the press room, which is accessible from outdoors, and he seems to be heading for that door. And then we have this group of people who look representative of America and look like they're going to be the choir behind him when he gets up to, possibly sermonize and possibly give us some kind of information. But it doesn't look like he's about to announce a deal.
It looks like, as Julie just said, I mean, these could be people who might be impacted, who might feel the pain if the country goes over the fiscal cliff. And as we always see in presidential speeches, I guess he might speak about these families, and we might hear exactly why they're standing behind him. Yeah, it doesn't. It actually looks like it might not be the briefing room, but some other room, perhaps some of the executive office building. Okay, the President Obama is going to be speaking in just a few moments. And just to recap, this is live special coverage of what could be a big day in Washington. The president coming to the podium right now to speak about the so-called fiscal cliff in what is the final hours. If we reach 11:59 p.m. and there is no deal in place, the nation will
Hello,
go
everybody.
Over the fiscal cliff. Here's the president.
Thank you. Please, everybody have a seat. Well, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the White House. Now, I realize that the last thing you want to hear on New Year's Eve is another speech from me. But I do need to talk about the progress that's being made in Congress today. For the last few days, leaders in both parties have been working toward an agreement that will prevent a middle-class tax hike from hitting 98% of all Americans starting tomorrow. Preventing that tax hike has been my top priority, because the last thing folks like the folks up here on this stage can afford right now is to pay an extra $2,000 in taxes next year. Middle-class families can't afford it. Businesses can't afford it. Our economy can't afford it. Now, today, it appears that an agreement to prevent this New Year's tax hike is within sight. But it's not done. There are still issues left to resolve, but we're hopeful that Congress can get it done. But it's not done. And so part of the reason that I wanted to speak to all of you here today is to make sure that we emphasize to Congress and that members of both parties understand that all across America, this is a pressing concern on people's minds. Now, the potential agreement that's being talked about would not only make sure the taxes don't go up on middle-class families, it also would extend tax credits for families with children. It would extend our tuition tax credit that's helped millions of families pay for college. It would extend tax credits for clean energy companies that are creating jobs and reducing our dependence on foreign oil. It would extend unemployment insurance to 2 million Americans who are out there still actively looking for a job. I have to say that ever since I took office, throughout the campaign, and over the last couple of months, my preference would have been to solve all these problems in the context of a larger agreement, a bigger deal, a grand bargain, whatever you want to call it, that solves our deficit problems in a balanced and responsible way, that doesn't just deal with the taxes, but deals with the spending in a balanced way so that we can put all this behind us and just focusing on growing our economy. But with this Congress, that was obviously a little too much to hope for at this time. It may be we can do it in stages. We're going to solve this problem instead in several steps. Last year, in 2011, we started reducing the deficit through $1 trillion in spending cuts. Those have already taken place. The agreement being worked on right now would further reduce the deficit by asking the wealthiest 2% of Americans to pay higher taxes for the first time in two decades. So that would add additional hundreds of billions of dollars to deficit reduction. So that's progress, but we're going to need to do more. Now, keep in mind that just last month, Republicans in Congress said they would never agree to raise tax rates on the wealthiest Americans. Obviously, the agreement that's currently being discussed would raise those rates and raise them permanently. Now, but keep in mind, we're going to still have more work to do. We still have deficits that have to be dealt with. We're still going to have to think about how we put our economy on a long-term trajectory of growth, how we continue to make investments in things like education, things like infrastructure that help our economy grow. And keep in mind that the threat of tax hikes going up is only one part of this so-called fiscal cliff that everybody's been talking about. What we also have facing us starting tomorrow are automatic spending cuts that are scheduled to go into effect. And keep in mind that some of these spending cuts that Congress has said will automatically go into effect have an impact on our Defense Department, but they also have an impact on things like Head Start. And so there are some programs that are scheduled to be cut that we're using an axe instead of a scalpel. May not always be the smartest cuts. And so that is a piece of business that still has to be taken care of. And I want to make clear that any agreement we have to deal with these automatic spending cuts that are being threatened for next month, those also have to be balanced. Because remember, my principle has always been, let's do things in a balanced, responsible way. And that means that revenues have to be part of the equation in turning off the sequester, in eliminating these automatic spending cuts, as well as spending cuts. Now, the same is true for any future deficit agreement. Obviously, we're going to have to do more to reduce our debt and our deficit. I'm willing to do more, but it's going to have to be balanced. We're going to have to do it in a balanced, responsible way. For example, I'm willing to reduce our government's Medicare bills by finding new ways to reduce the cost of health care in this country. That's something that we all should agree on. You know, we want to make sure that Medicare is there for future generations. But the current trajectory of health care costs is going up so high, we've got to find ways to make sure that it's sustainable. But that kind of reform has to go hand in hand with doing some more work to reform our tax code so that wealthy individuals, the biggest corporations, can't take advantage of loopholes and deductions that aren't available to most of the folks standing up here, aren't available to most Americans. So there's still more work to be done in the tax code to make it fairer, even as we're also looking at how we can strengthen something like Medicare. Now, if Republicans think that I will finish the job of deficit reduction through spending cuts alone, and you hear that sometimes coming from them, that sort of after today, we're just going to try to shove only spending cuts down, shove spending cuts at us that will hurt seniors or hurt students or hurt middle-class families without asking also equivalent sacrifice from millionaires or companies with a lot of lobbyists, et cetera. If they think that's going to be the formula for how we solve this thing, then they've got another thing coming. That's not how it's going to work. We've got to do this in a balanced and responsible way, and if we're going to be serious about deficit reduction and debt reduction, then it's going to have to be a matter of shared sacrifice, at least as long as I'm president. And I'm going to be president for the next 4 years, I hope. So, anyway, for now, our most immediate priority is to stop taxes going up for middle-class families starting tomorrow. I think that is a modest goal that we can accomplish. Democrats and Republicans in Congress have to get this done, but they're not there yet. They are close, but they're not there yet. And one thing we can count on with respect to this Congress is that if there's even 1 second left before you have to do what you're supposed to do, they will use that last second. So as of this point, it looks like I'm going to be spending New Year's here in D.C. And so y'all are going to be hanging out in D.C. too. Right? I can come to your house? Is that what you're saying? I don't want to spoil the party. But the people who are with me here today, the people who are watching at home, they need our leaders in Congress to succeed. They need us to all stay focused on them, not on politics, not on special interests. They need to be focused on families, students, grandmas, folks who are out there working really, really hard and are just looking for a fair shot and some reward for that hard work. They expect our leaders to succeed on their behalf. So do I. And so keep the pressure on over the next 12 hours or so. Let's see if we can get this thing done. And I thank you all. And if I don't see you, if I don't show up at your house, I want to wish everybody a Happy New Year. Thank you very much. All right.
That was President Obama speaking at the White House about the these late-hour negotiations to avoid the so-called fiscal cliff. The president said that there is an agreement within sight. The agreement is not done. The agreement that he was talking about, he said, would extend unemployment insurance. It would ensure that taxes do not go up when the new year begins on the huge majority of Americans. Taxes would go up on the wealthiest taxpayers. But the president again saying that there's progress, there is an agreement within sight, but that the deal is not done. But as he joked, and he did seem to be in kind of a jovial mood, I mean, he joked that if Congress has even a second left to come up with a deal, they're going to use those final seconds. NPR's John Itzdeel, let me start with you. What is different after you heard the president speak? What is this deal coming together?
Well, I think we've got a deal, or the deal is in sight on the tax part of the fiscal cliff. He was clear there's no deal on the spending cut side of the fiscal cliff, and that's going to need to be worked out. He says the agreement that's shaping up would extend middle-class tax cuts, but also extend a number of the tax cuts that he had enacted for lower-income Americans. They extended child tax credit, college credits, green energy credits, and then extend unemployment benefits for the long-term unemployed as well. You know, he certainly the president seemed to have had something lifted from his shoulders. I think he's confident that there's going to get something's going to get done, but there's still, you know, there's a lot of work to be done, both to get this this prospective agreement passed through the Congress and to deal with these spending cuts in the coming weeks. And don't forget, there's another debt ceiling fight to be had in about 6 weeks from now, yes, which could throw us right back in the soup.
As he said, he wanted a bigger agreement, that he's not going to get it if this does go through, and it's still a big if these two sides come together. But it would take care of the taxes. Americans would not feel, you know, a new tax burden. But a lot of these big decisions, the debt ceiling and these automatic spending cuts are pushed for later. Julie Ravner, let me ask you, the president did seem to be open to entitlement reform. He spoke about some sort of Medicare reform. This would not be part of the deal coming together today, but you know, presumably next year. How important is that?
Apparently it is part of the deal coming together today, because one of the things that has to happen also today, although it's not connected to the fiscal cliff, is that if Congress doesn't act, Medicare payments to physicians will be cut 27%. This is an ongoing problem that Congress has been trying to deal with since 2002. And I believe that the part of the agreement that deals with that says that they will cancel that cut. And obviously it would cost some amount of money, and that to make up that amount of money, they would agree to make some unspecified as yet cuts in Medicare to make up for the money that it would cost to take away the doc fee cut, the doc fee fix, as they call it. So that's one of these things that's lingering out there that they know they need to fix by the end of the year. And obviously that's something that no one wants to happen. They don't want to cut doctor fees by 27%. That would end up with doctors not taking Medicare patients.
NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving, we just have a few seconds left. I'll give you the final word. What did you take from what we just heard from the president?
The president seemed ebullient. The president seemed quite smiling and in a party mood, New Year's Eve mood. I don't know that that necessarily is called for given the situation in Congress, but he wanted the contrast between his mood and what we may see later on tonight if and when the Senate or the House puts a stop to this deal.
Again, it could be a long night. The president himself said he's going to be spending New Year's at the White House. The negotiations will continue. Again, we just heard from the president at the White House saying that there is a deal to avoid the fiscal cliff in sight, but that the deal is not done. And you can follow these negotiations as they go on right here at NPR. This is NPR Live, special coverage of the president's remarks on the fiscal cliff. I'm David Greene, and keep following us here at NPR News.